Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. Previously, we began the website Very Well's series of articles on dementia and Alzheimer's disease, focusing on myths, personality changes, and apathy. This week, we continue with Very Well's articles, including Is Chronic Stress Related to an Increased Risk of Dementia? From December 2017, 13 Ethical Dilemmas in Alzheimer's and Other Dementias from February 2018, and 9 Things to Learn from People Living with Dementia from November 2017. First is Chronic Stress Related to an Increased Risk of Dementia by Esther Harima, MSW, and reviewed by Claudia Chavers, MD. As scientists continue to work on unraveling the cause of Alzheimer's, they take note when a clue rises to the top. In the last few years, one of those clues, stress, has been highlighted by multiple research studies for its potential correlation with an increased risk for Alzheimer's disease and other types of dementia. A summary of 3 research articles. The journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences outlines a study where researchers found, through work with mice, that chronic emotional stress seems to affect the health of the brain. Mice who were exposed to repeated stress began to develop some of the neurofibrillary tangles, or tau protein, that are characteristic of the human brain as Alzheimer's develops. The hippocampus was particularly affected in mice, which is also most often the area of the brain that is first affected by Alzheimer's disease. Contrary to the effects of repeated chronic stress, mice who experienced acute or a brief one-time episode did not develop those brain changes. If the same holds true for humans, those of us who experience chronic stress in our lives could be at greater risk to develop Alzheimer's disease. While some feel it's a stretch to apply research in mice to humans, science has had some significant success using this model. Another study, published in the British Medical Journal, explains research that was conducted over 38 years with 800 women in Sweden. This study tracked the number of potentially stressful events the participants were experiencing, such as divorce, widowhood, familial illness, job challenges, etc., beginning in 1968 and periodically through the years until 2005. Symptoms of distress were also periodically assessed. The study found that the number of psychosocial stressors, factual occurrences, as well as the women's perception of the events, the distress they experienced, were both independently correlated with an increased risk for developing dementia over time. A third study reviewed multiple previous research studies and concluded that while there is clearly support for a connection between stress and cognitive functioning, the evidence is not strong enough to determine that stress causes Alzheimer's disease. Rather, it appears to be one of several factors that can increase your risk for cognitive decline. Coping with and decreasing stress. Decreasing the stress in your life and coping with it in more effective ways is already recommended for both your physical and emotional health. The possibility of reducing the risk of Alzheimer's disease gives you one more reason to consider making some life changes. And now, 13 Ethical Dilemmas in Alzheimer's and Other Dementias, Right or Wrong? By Esther Harima. Because Alzheimer's and other types of dementia affect the ability of the brain to make decisions and remember information, they often present various ethical dilemmas to family members and caregivers. They include the following. 1. Informing and explaining the dementia diagnosis to the person. Some research found that more than half of people with dementia are not told of their dementia diagnosis. Physicians may be concerned about the person's reaction, and not wanting to trigger emotional distress in their patient, they may just skip over discussing the diagnosis or downplay the impact, saying something like, "You do have a little trouble with your memory." While the desire to avoid upsetting the patient and their family is understandable, we don't skip over telling a person with cancer that they have a malignant tumor and that it might not be operable. In dementia, the early stages offer the chance to take care of legal and financial issues for the future and discuss medical preferences with the family. You can also go to the Very Well website to find 12 benefits of early detection in dementia. Number 2, driving decisions. For many of us, driving is a sure sign of independence. We can get where we need to go and do this whenever we need or want to. However, in dementia, there comes a time when driving isn't safe anymore. When do you decide it's too dangerous? If you take away that ability and independence, you're taking much away from that person. But if you hesitate too long and your loved one ends up killing someone because she made a poor choice as she drove, the results are clearly devastating for all involved. 3. Safety in the home. Your loved one may demand to continue to live at home, but is she still safe to do so? There are several precautions that you can take to improve the safety at home and can also bring in others to help. Perhaps you've decided she's safe if she wears a GPS locator, or if you have a camera in the home. Or maybe you use an electronically programmed medication dispenser to help her safely take her medicines. At what point do you override her desire to live at home in your attempt to protect her? Another suggested reading, Tips to Know When It's Time for Nursing Home Care, from the Very Well website. Number 4, enacting the power of attorney. Autonomy involves the right to make our own decisions. We all want it, and in person-centered care, we want to foster and protect this in others as well. However, as dementia progresses, this ability fades and it becomes time to consider enacting or activating the power of attorney. This means that the person's medical decisions are handed over to the person they identified on the power of attorney document. Typically, a physician and a psychologist, or two physicians, have to determine that the individual is unable to participate in medical decisions. The timing of this decision and the line that physicians and psychologists draw varies from person to person, with some doctors preserving the decision-making right longer than others. Consent for treatment and clinical trials. In early stages of dementia, your family member can probably understand the risks and benefits of a treatment, but as memory and executive functioning declines, this ability blurs. Make sure that your loved one really does understand these issues before signing permission forms. Number 6, hiding medications in food. In the middle stages of dementia, it's possible that dementia may cause the person to be resistant to taking medications. Some caregivers have tried to eliminate this battle by disguising pills and hiding them in food. Research suggests that this practice, called covert administration, has been fairly common, and some feel that it's necessary for the well-being of the person. Others argue that it is ethically inappropriate because it's tricking the person into taking medicine. This issue has evolved over the years as medication capsules can be opened and the drug sprinkled into the food or drink of the person with dementia. There are also patches that deliver medicines and even prescription lotions that are rubbed on the skin. For example, a topical dose of Ativan can be administered by simply rubbing on the person's neck. Others argue that if the power of attorney has been activated, which essentially renders the person unable to consent to medications, and the individual appointed as the power of attorney has already consented to the medication use, then placing the medication in food can provide an easier way to administer it. Number 7, sexual activity. The question of when someone is able to consent to sexual activity when they have dementia hit the newsstands in 2015. A man was accused of having sexual activity with his wife, who had Alzheimer's, and he was found not guilty. But this question of consent in dementia remains for many. Merely a diagnosis of dementia does not prevent someone from being able to consent, and many argue that sexual activity is a highly important factor for maintaining quality of life. The challenge comes in knowing how to protect the right to engage in meaningful sexual activity, but prevent someone from being taken advantage of by another. Number 8, therapeutic lying. Is lying to your loved one okay when the truth would be distressing to him? There are professionals on both sides of the issue. Generally, it's best to use other techniques like distraction through a subject change or a meaningful activity, or attempt validation therapy. For example, if someone is asking where her mother is, and she passed away many years ago, validation therapy would suggest that you ask her to tell you more about her mother, or ask her what she loved about her. Number 9, genetic testing for a polypoprotein E or APOE gene. Genetic testing can prompt many ethical questions. These include to whom the results will be disclosed, what the next step should be if you do carry the APOE gene, and how to cope with this information. The results do not necessarily indicate if the person will develop dementia. They simply indicate the presence of the gene, which poses an increased risk. Because there are so many ethical considerations about genetic testing and the results do not directly link to outcome, the Alzheimer's Association does not recommend genetic testing for the APOE gene on a regular basis at this time. Number 10, blood tests that predict the development of Alzheimer's. There are blood tests being developed and researched that have been reported to be potentially very accurate in predicting, years in advance, who will or won't develop dementia. Similar to the APOE gene testing, these tests pose questions about what to do with that information. Number 11, administering antipsychotic medications. Antipsychotic medications, when used as approved by the Federal Drug Administration, can effectively treat psychosis, paranoia, and hallucinations, thus reducing the person's emotional distress and potential for self-harm. When used in dementia, these medications can occasionally be helpful to reduce paranoia and hallucinations. However, they also pose an increased risk of negative side effects and even death when used in dementia. The use of antipsychotics should never be the first option when determining how to better respond to and reduce the challenging behaviors in dementia. Number 12, stopping dementia medications. Dementia medications are prescribed with the hope of slowing down the progression of the disease. Effectiveness varies, with some experiencing a noticeable change when these medicines are started, while it's difficult to see any impact in others. The question of how much this type of medicine helps and when it should be stopped is difficult to answer because no one knows if the person with dementia might be far worse off without the medicine or not. If it's discontinued, the fear is that the person could decline suddenly and significantly. Others ask if they are just paying money needlessly to drug companies, given that there is typically a limited time frame for drug effectiveness. Number 13, end-of-life decisions. As persons with dementia near the end of their life, there are several decisions their loved ones need to make. Some have been very clear about their preferences long before they develop dementia, and this can signify ease of process. Others, however, have not indicated what they want or don't want in terms of medical treatment, and this leaves the decision makers guessing what they think the person would want. End-of-life decisions include options like full code, do CPR, and place on ventilator, versus do not resuscitate, feeding tube wishes, and IVs for hydration or antibiotics. And now, 9 things to learn from people living with dementia. The gift, Truths Our Loved Ones with Dementia Teach Us, also by Esther Harima, MSW, and reviewed by a board-certified physician. If you know someone living with Alzheimer's disease, vascular dementia, Lewy body dementia, or another type of dementia, you know that these conditions bring many challenges. Symptoms such as memory loss, word-finding difficulty, disorientation, behavioral and psychological symptoms, and general confusion are hard, both for the person experiencing them and for loved ones and caretakers to watch. However, in addition to the difficulty that these challenges bring, they also bring us reminders of several important truths that we often forget in our fast-paced lives. The truth is that if we are willing to listen and watch, we can learn many things from our loved ones who have dementia and experience these difficulties. These reminders from them can serve as gifts to us all as they help enrich our lives. Feelings are more important than facts. Do you ever wonder if it really matters? In the midst of the challenges of being a caregiver, it can be easy to run out of time as we try to balance our various obligations. In those moments, you may question the value of spending time with someone who might possibly forget that you were there just moments later. Research, however, as we've mentioned before, says that although a visit to your loved one who has dementia might be quickly forgotten, the positive feelings you created by your visit will remain long past the specific memory of it. Additionally, spending time with your loved one benefits you as well as them. The truth is that paying attention to and being careful with the feelings of everyone, dementia or not, is important since they will very often remember how we made them feel above what we said or did. Similar to those living with dementia, this is often the case, whether it was a positive or negative experience. The information provided or the verbal exchange we had with them might diminish, but how we made them feel often has a lasting impact. Actions are more effective than words. Sometimes communication in dementia requires more actions and fewer words. For example, if you're trying to help someone perform their activities of daily living, such as brushing their teeth, you might be more successful if you speak less but demonstrate on yourself how to brush your own teeth. This can serve as a model for your loved one to follow by reminding her what steps to take in order to accomplish the task. The truth is that in much of life, it's what we do that carries more weight than what we say. We can have a good talk, but proof is in our actions. If our words and deeds don't fit with each other, our actions will outweigh our words and will communicate more loudly than what we say, just as they do for those living with dementia. Appropriate physical touch is beneficial. When we're caring for someone with dementia, it's important to remember that she might benefit from physical touch that is not related to trying to do something for her. In other words, hold her hand, brush her hair if she finds that soothing, and give her a hug. Don't let everything be about getting the task at hand completed. The truth is that most of us would benefit from increased amounts of appropriate physical touch from others. This communicates that we are loved, cared for, and treasured by those around us. A hug or a pat on the shoulder can go a long way toward conveying worth, encouraging someone, or simply brightening our day. The benefits of human touch don't just apply to those with dementia, but to all of us. Music is powerful. Using music in dementia can have a very powerful effect. The memories and nostalgia can quickly flow upon hearing a favorite song from the past. Your loved one might begin singing along and remembering every word, even if in conversation he struggles to find enough words to form a sentence. Music can serve as a great distraction, too, allowing you to more easily help him get dressed in the morning, for example. Music can also cause a withdrawn person to perk up and begin to tap his foot to the rhythm. The truth is that music has power for many of us. You can send a song to a friend to remind him that you're thinking of him, or hear music in church that encourages you. You might listen to a song from years ago that transports you right back to that time in your life. The beauty of music can stir us to dance, cry, love, doubt, and believe, and sometimes hearing our feelings expressed in song can begin a measure of healing in us when life is difficult. This, too, is a trait we share with those who live with a dementia diagnosis. Live in the present. Dementia causes one to focus on today. Because of memory impairment in dementia, your loved one might not be able to recall names of family members or certain events or persons. Both short-term memories, such as what he ate for breakfast, and long-term memories, for instance, the name of the high school that he attended 50 years ago, become impaired in dementia. Looking ahead into the future is also difficult for those living with dementia. Things that haven't happened yet are abstract in nature, so the general focus is on the here and now. The truth is that we all would be wise to follow the person with dementia's lead by spending more of our time and energy living in the present, instead of getting stuck in regrets or pain of the past or worrying about what's going to happen in the future. Clearly, there are times when we need to process events or issues so that we can move forward in life in a healthy manner, and planning ahead is important. However, we should guard against missing the gift of awakening this morning and living today. Ask for help. It's wise. Have you ever heard someone with dementia call out for help? Sometimes it may seem like the person with dementia gets stuck on calling out to others. But often, it's better than watching those who need help and are too proud or stubborn to ask for it. The truth is that while independence and isolation are typical in our society, it's not just those who struggle with memory loss that need help. We all need each other, and sometimes we need to learn to ask for help. A sense of community and teamwork is important, and laying down our pride by asking for help can foster interdependent relationships that are transparent and genuine. Why stress over the little things? If someone with dementia is having a hard day and displaying some challenging behaviors, we know that sometimes he needs some extra time and space, and we begin to let go of our expectations and our desire for control over the things that really don't matter. For example, is it really a big deal if he wants to eat dessert first, or is wearing socks that don't match? It just doesn't matter, and the day will go much more smoothly after we adjust our perspective. The truth is that we often get ourselves so upset over things that don't really matter in the long run. Sometimes it's very easy to lose perspective on what actually is important. We would all do well to employ the same strategy of letting go that we might use in dementia by reminding ourselves to breathe, let go, and place things back in perspective. Children are good medicine. If you have ever been in a nursing care home or an assisted living facility and watched what happens when young children enter the facility, you know this is true. The day may be quietly moving forward, or an older adult with dementia is dozing off in her wheelchair after playing a bingo game. Suddenly, you hear the sounds of giggles from a visiting family's children, and everyone begins to sit up and pay attention. The sleeping resident wakes up, and the resident who is struggling with depression begins to smile and talk to the 2-year-old child who is running around the room. Research on intergenerational programs demonstrates that both children and older adults can benefit from these interactions. The relationships that develop across generations can increase cognitive activity and improve quality of life for both the children and the older adults. The truth is that we're sometimes too busy to pay attention to the children around us. While teachers and parents will clarify that all is not sunshine and roses when children are around, they'll also tell us that spending time with children enriches our lives. Let's not wait until we have dementia to notice the joy of the children. And the disease is not the person. One thing that people living with dementia want us to remember about them is that their disease is not their identity. This is conveyed especially in our language, in the way we talk and write. Dementia advocates have often reminded us that rather than using the term the demented patient, we can instead use the word the person living with dementia to convey the fact that the person is primary, not the diagnosis of dementia. And this can reduce the stigma of that is attached to the disease. The truth is that we should know and remember that there are no insignificant people, and a diagnosis, disease, or disability does not reduce the value of a person. Let's catch ourselves the next time we identify someone by their diagnosis, such as the cancer patient, and remind ourselves that they are first and foremost an individual with unique worth. Those around us are not less than just because they are different, were born with a disability, or have been diagnosed with a disease. In fact, like the person living with dementia, they may be capable of teaching us several truths that will change our perspective and enrich our lives. In the midst of many challenges that those living with dementia face, they offer us poignant reminders of truths that we who are without dementia often forget. Well, I particularly like this last article's focus on what we can learn from those living with dementia, especially the importance of touch and the suggestion to avoid stressing over the unimportant. In addition to the articles read these last 2 weeks, VeryWell's website offers information on the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's disease, other kinds of dementia besides Alzheimer's, the most common, risk factors for dementia and Alzheimer's, mild cognitive impairment, and other treatable illnesses that mimic symptoms of dementia, and much more. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.